Welcome back to Gaming with Gage, your podcast for role-playing games and the periphery. Thanks for being here. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for everyone who checked out our episode last week where we had Brodor on. If you haven't had the chance yet, you can listen to that and then go over to Why We Game, which is Brodor's show, where I was a guest, and it was super fun. Before we jump into this episode, I just want to take a moment to remind all of you, when this episode ends, the conversation continues in our Discord server. So this week, I have the honor and privilege to welcome back Eric Ostley. Eric is the host of Gamers Table. He is the GM of the Audioverse award-winning actual play podcast, Resting Glitch Face. Got so close and messed up the name, Eric, sorry. And the producer of many a live stream. And most importantly, Eric, you were the first guest we ever had on Gaming with Gage.
Right.
It's a pleasure to have you again.
Started that off. And, yeah.
Started at the low bar so that we had nowhere to go but up.
That's right. That's exactly the sentiment there is you start as low as you possibly can. So that way you don't, that, which is bad because I am now following Brodor. Oof.
I will say that was a wonderful conversation and hopefully you can live up. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Right. How much editing was involved in that one?
Actually, he was really well behaved. He only swore once and, it was easy to bleep. But this week we're doing a topic episode, which is something, this will be the first topic in season 7. And we're going to talk about when the players take over. We've all had that situation where you pitched a campaign and you ran the first session of that campaign and everyone seemed really on board. And now maybe you're in that like 2-5 zone. And all of a sudden you realize like the game that you have planned is not at all what they were expecting. And it's not the game they're playing. And now all of a sudden you have like all of these notes and all of these ideas and this NPC and it's all not at all happening. And so kind of talking about how do you tell that that's what's really going on? And that it's not just, you know, Instagram distracting your players. How do you mitigate that and how do you kind of adjust for the future? So Eric, you're an amazing GM, so I'm guessing this has never happened to you.
No, it has never happened. So I'm gonna have to lean on you for this one because it's never ever happened to me. No, that's not true. I know what the expectation for the answer to this is going to be, and I'm going to completely go the other direction. For the most part, I think that a lot of GM advice would say, well, you just go where the players take you. And I don't believe in that. If you have put a lot of effort into going a certain direction, I think it's cheating you as the GM for all the, obviously you're doing something that you are wanting to do. And sure, you're going to do what the players want to do, but don't discount yourself. And don't cheat yourself of some of the stuff that you are working on. So I think that, whenever you have players who are wanting to just kind of go on their own direction, there's nothing wrong with that, but don't throw out everything that you are doing to just please them because you need to please yourself too.
So Resting Glitch Face is, and I said it right this time, is a perfect example of that, I think. Because you'll be like, here's this big plot, and there's a bomb, and there's drug dealers. And you totally let them, like, go shopping. Just to use the gaming terminology, even though I think once they might have actually gone shopping. But, you know, they obviously, like, love the slice of life, love doing all of the party RP stuff. But like really early on, I remember you literally just threw a bomb into the middle of it just to be like, hey, this story is still going on, yes. Even though you guys aren't.
Right. Well, and Resting Glitch Face is, and for your listeners who don't know, it's a Shadowrun actual play. And the players themselves are, most of them are very well versed in that slice of life anime type storytelling, and they enjoy that kind of thing. Up until I met them, I didn't even know what that was. so they're playing this the completely different game than what I had set out to do. But as a game master, you have to recognize what pushes your player's buttons, and I recognized that fairly quickly. It helped that I had played with one or two of them before, so I kind of knew play style, and it took me a little while to kind of get to that realization that these players aren't going to approach the game on a, you know, on a session to session basis like groups that I am used to. They want to slow things down and deal with the, I wouldn't say minute to minute, but certainly everything's focused around these characters' perception and what's going on in their little bubbles as opposed to what's going on around them. So I did an adjustment because initially I was going to run it just like I normally run Shadowrun. You get missions, you do this, you do that. And after a while, I realized they're playing a different game. So I need to adjust what I'm doing. And I would come to this, you have to come to this like moment of truth, right? It's like, am I going to abandon everything that I've been planning and have been doing up until this point because the players just don't care? I decided that I wasn't going to do that. And so what I ended up doing, and it's a lot of the things that I do, I draw heavily from game masters that I play with, you know. So if somebody runs a game for me, I'm not just enjoying the game. I'm also analyzing how they run a game and seeing if I can apply that to how I run a game. I'm always doing that. And that's one of the reasons why I like to do one shots with other GMs and just kind of play on in other people's games just, you know, once or twice, just to kind of see how they would do something. And in addition to that, I also play in other long-term games too. So being a player sometimes is a good thing for a game master just to kind of see how other people do things. And one of the things that I really enjoy about Dan Repperger and the way he runs a game is the world is going on, whether or not you care that it is. And I applied some of that philosophy to Resting Glitch. No matter what the players are doing, I know what is going on outside of their bubble. And every once in a while, that outside world will poke in and make them pay attention. Or at least if I give them a task or if I give them a, you know, one of the big things about that show is I will lay out plot points or I'll lay out clues of this is what's going on in the bigger plot. And they ignore it because they want to flirt or they want to go out on a date or things like that. If they don't deal with something, it's not that I just say, okay, well, I need to move whatever I was going to do and make them, you know, the old game master trope is if you want the players to go left and they go right, then you just put the room that was to the left to the right. So that way they run into
quantum ogre theory.
Yes. So I decided that I wasn't going to do that. I'm not going to make them care about or interact with what I want them to interact with. I'll just go forward as if they didn't. And then they have to deal with the repercussions of ignoring a plot point, or if it's like, if they would have done X, then they could have maybe prevented this, but they didn't. So X became Y, became Z, and now it's coming back around to, we could have done something, or we could have looked into this, but we didn't.
You just ignore the players. Yeah.
The players are ignoring you, so you ignore them. Exactly.
I will say one thing that I think is a really easy, actionable piece of advice. If you don't want to scrap everything, like you were saying, like conventional wisdom, just go with the players. If you don't want to do that, one thing is to analyze what the players are latching on to and kind of figure out a way to incorporate that into whatever you've already planned. And I feel like as Resting Glitch like kept going, and I'm, for anyone listening at home, I'm going to use RGF a lot because I'm familiar with it. Eric runs it and it's publicly available. Like you can go listen to it and know what we're talking about. Whereas if I talk about my home game, five people know what I'm talking about. So, right. You know, Glitch makes an easy example. But, oh, you guys care a lot about these interpersonal relationships. That is going to now be something that constantly ties into this bigger meta plot, these jobs that you're ignoring. And it was, I thought, kind of an artful move to be like, I see what you care about. and I understand that you care about it, and I'm going to tie it into these other stakes so that you now have buy-in. Without saying caring about your kid's sister is stupid, you know what I mean? Or caring about going on a date with this biker guy is stupid. Instead, you took those things and twisted them back into like the bigger plans that you had, so that when they did ignore X and Y happened, they felt it that much more.
Right.
And I think
right.
that's something that's easy, no matter what game you're running, is to go, okay, I thought we were going to go storm the castle and they're all over here talking to the cheese salesman. So, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have the guy who owns the castle kill the cheese salesman and make right. it personal. Like a silly example, but that kind of thing of using what they're latching onto to bring them back to what you have prepared.
Right. And it certainly makes things matter more. It mm-hmm. slows the game down. There's no doubt about that. So if you're in a time crunch, let's say, you know, you're running a game and you've only got X amount of time, maybe that advice isn't for you. But if you've got enough time to kind of let the characters breathe a little bit and let them do these things with these NPCs, you can use those NPCs to move your plot along, because NPCs will know what's going on in the world around them. And like you said, you know, if this cheese merchant has become like some, and you know, there's a zillion memes about it. You know, it's like you have all of this intricate plot prepared and this cardboard cutout NPC becomes the focal point of their entire universe. And what you end up doing is you take that cheese merchant, like you said, and well, maybe they haven't always been a cheese merchant. Maybe they used to work for the king, and maybe that, you know, it's this whole other plot is behind this. And now this cheese merchant, who you've spent three sessions having them, you know, become like this father figure to them, something, you know, make they care about this NPC, and then you kill them. And that's pulling something directly from my playbook. Is you find out, like you said, find out what they care about, what the story they want to play, and then you make it real. It's almost like you're making it personal. You're punching them where it hurts.
In a good way, though. Don't actually punch your players.
No, don't punch. Yeah, don't LARP it at the table. I have countless examples, in my own games and things like that, where players want to interact with your NPCs. They want to care about your NPCs. They just might not care about the ones that you care about.
Or the ones you wanted them to care about.
Right. So you just in that, you would make that adjustment of, okay, well, maybe you don't want to care about this particular person. Just give some of the background of this NPC they're ignoring to this other person. In that way, I do make that adjustment.
Well, I was going to say, what about the other side of things? What about people who do want to adjust to meet the player's expectations? You know, we kind of answered the question of whether or not you should. I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, I agree with you. We were talking about this last week. I think you and I probably have similar feelings on what the GM's responsibility at the table is.
Right.
Whereas the current crop of gaming doesn't necessarily agree. So if you're accepting the idea that you're just another player at the table, so to speak, and the majority rules, like, what are some ways that you can adjust towards them?
Well, let's say you had completely planned an espionage game and they want to do a post-apocalyptic game. Sometimes you just have to say, this is not what we, because we're also under the assumption that we've already done a session zero and played a couple of sessions, and then it becomes apparent that you're not interested in the game that we decided that we were going to play. Be it whatever, you know, whatever has completely changed. In my personal experience, this has happened where something in, let's say, popular culture catches people's, imagination or whatever. Let's say you're doing an espionage game and then The Mandalorian comes out and everybody wants to do The Mandalorian. You can do that. One of the things I love to do is I love to mash genres together in my stories and pull from things that, let's say we're playing Star Wars, I'll pull inspiration from things that aren't even remotely Star Wars. Let's say you want to play you had decided to play this specific espionage game, but then everybody wants to do this lone wolf and cub type story because of Mandalorian. You could kind of meet in the middle. Give them aspects of the things that they want without completely trashing what you've already prepped. that would be, for me, the way to do it is, what is it that attracts you to the way that you want to play? Let's say they're making this change and you're like, oh, this isn't really the game that I wanted to, or that we were going to run, but it's clear they want to go in that this other direction. Why? And it's okay to ask your players that. What do you,
You want to stop and you can ask, which I think people overlook all the time. You can just ask them.
Right. Yeah. And I know that it's, some people are self-conscious, especially new game masters are self-conscious about that. I get it. I really, really do. Cause especially if you're running for people you don't necessarily know, because they don't want to necessarily play the game that you decided, or you as a group decided you were going to do, and then things are changing, they're not rejecting you. They're not rejecting your story. They just have, maybe something struck them and they just kind of wanted to go in this other direction. They're not rejecting what you're doing. They just, sometimes maybe it's a side quest. You could turn it into a side quest. Let them get their feel for what they're wanting to do. If you wanted to do this like hex crawl, or this like Lord of the Rings, where you're going to do a bunch of traveling, but then they decide you stop at an inn and they decide they want to run the inn. And that completely throws a monkey wrench into, all of these plans that you have for them going and exploring this other area and all this other stuff. Well, you can just slow the game down and let them run that in for a little while. Obviously, they've, made it personal because this is what they really want. And you can start trickling in some of the things that's going on outside of this inn, kernels of things to happen later. And then, if you're really devious, you burn down the inn and make them.
I was thinking the same thing. You burn down the inn. The big bad burns down the inn, obviously, is the end of that story.
Let's say, I've done it where, I wanted to do an exploration, and I'm pulling from my own experience here. They decided they wanted to run this inn and blah, 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 and they didn't really want to go and do anything else. And then the big bad comes, burns down the inn, and takes care of some of the guests and the work staff. And now it's personal. And now we have to go after this person who is, a complete bad guy because they've made it personal. So pull from some of that stuff. It's, if they want to slow it down and they want to go in a different direction, let them, because all they're doing is they're feeding you their hooks. They're feeding you their buy-in. And then you just take it away from them.
And I will say, there are times when like 9 times out of 10, like I said, I'm completely in agreement with you, Eric. There are times when you're wrong. Knowing when that is hard. To pull from my own experience, we talk about hex crawl exploration game. I ran one of those and it was a mistake. I was excited about this idea of, you guys are walking west for 3 days. All right, roll survival. I'll tell you about your variant. I'll describe the landmarks. And I had everyone drawing their own maps and stuff like that. And I loved it. And I thought it was so cool. And they did not care.
Right.
And I ended up scrapping that game after maybe 4 or 5 sessions. And then with a lot of the same players, maybe a year later, went back and did a full session zero and got player buy-in and kind of built the story around the characters, and same setting, some of the same themes, ended up being one of the best campaigns I've ever run. So there are times when you might just be wrong, and what you're looking to do is not your bad GM or anything like that. It might be a bad fit for your group, or like Eric, like what you were saying, it might be a bad fit right now. Right now you're trying to give everyone chocolate and everyone's in the mood for caramel, and that doesn't mean they don't like chocolate. They just don't want it right now. Right. And then other times it could also be a bad game for you. So knowing more about my GM style now, as the more you GM, the more you realize what you're good at.
Right.
That was an absolutely wrong game for me to run. My games are super RP heavy and have to do with a lot of the slice of life stuff that you're talking about, Eric. Mm-hmm. And then the session ends with someone dead, and then we deal with that next session. Like, that is a game that I'm great at. I am not great at, oh yes, how many rations do you have? It's just not something I am good at.
Right.
And I shouldn't have been running that game.
Yeah.
Knowing when that is really hard. And so sometimes it's better to make the adjustments first. Or talk to your group. Like, I know this sounds like me beating a dead horse, because I talk about this all the time, but you are allowed to talk to them. A lot of the times they're also your friends. You can just say, hey guys, feels like this game is going it feels like what you guys want out of this game and what I was planning are a little wrong. So real quick, just tell me, what are the things you're loving? What are the things you don't want to see anymore? Just so I can make sure we're all on the same page. And you might be surprised. There's times when a player seems to not care at all about an entire subplot. And you've asked the player and they say, no, that's absolutely amazing. I love that. I haven't seen that in a while. It's really cool. I'm interested in exploring it. And you're like, for real though? Because that's when your phone comes out, is every time we're dealing with Bobby or whatever. You know what I mean? So communication can really help you there. Also, one way that you can mitigate a lot of this is by doing a really in-depth session zero, which I know I've talked about a bunch, but it really is just like one of the easiest GM tools to avoid so many common GM problems.
All of your communication starts there.
100%.
And the problem with a session zero sometimes that I've found, players are very hip to say yes when they mean maybe or even no. And that, what I mean is, you know, it's like the rest of the group is like, let's do this type of game. And they're like, well, I'm not really into that, but everybody else seems to be into it. I guess I'm into it. You know, it's like that. There's like a social experiment where people answer, like there's people sitting there and one person isn't in on it. It's clearly the answer is red, but the rest of the group says blue, and they, you know, the peer pressure makes them say blue also, that kind of thing. That happens a lot in session zeros, I've found, where people will just kind of follow along with the group where they like, I don't care. I just want to have fun. I just want to play a game and hang out with my friends, when that's not really the truth. The truth is they want to play, you know, they want to go and get rid of the one ring, but they're afraid that if they say that because everybody else wants to do something completely different, then you've lost them. So sometimes having the session zero is great in finding out what the group wants, but I'm becoming more and more of a fan of having sessions like session 0A, 0B, 0C, where it's game master and player just having a conversation. You can have it either before the group session zero, or you could have it after. I prefer the before, where I'm just, and it doesn't have to be anything formal, just kind of like, hey, I'm going to run a vampire game, or I'm thinking about running a vampire game. What do you think about that? Okay. You know, what do you know about vampires? What do you find interesting about vampires? You know, that kind of thing. And you kind of touch base with each one of the players. So then that way, as a game master, when you're running your session zero, you actually are holding some cards, some pretty important cards, where you can kind of say, Tom likes, you know, Interview with a Vampire kind of, you know, dealing with just like a small group of vampires. But then Justine wants to do the whole politics and things like that. Where can we kind of meet in the middle here? Where can we, you know, somebody wants to do all the same clan. Somebody else wants to have a mixed clan. Well, what do we think about maybe, you know, a couple of people from one clan and everybody else being from different? So you're kind of guiding this group dynamic, because when everybody's coming to the table cold, I think that a lot of that, I don't really care, or I'll just do what the group wants to do. And then it turns out that that's not what they want to do. And that works also for the game master, because then even before session zero, you can kind of, you know, you're essentially, you know, plumbing the water to see, is this something that the group is interested in? Should I start investing time in this? You know, is it going to go in a direction that I want it to go? Right?
100%. I never had that thought, but now as you're talking about it, I totally see the value in it. And like you said, it could be something as simple as a text message or a, you know, Discord, and just saying, hey, what are you thinking? You know, answer a couple bullet points so you can get a fresh, unbiased opinion. I like session 0ABC. I'm also wondering if we need like a session 3.5.
Right.
There's a lot of things that I thought would be really neat before I did them. And then I was like, oh, that wasn't what I wanted. Like, even a little bit. I thought that this character was going to be super fun and cool, but I realized I just hate D&D casters and I shouldn't have played a caster, you know, or like something, you know, something like that.
Right.
And I almost wonder if there's a benefit of like, all right, guys, we're going to do session zero. We're going to play a couple sessions. About the time that you at least know the meta plot is there, even if you don't know what the heck's going on, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to say, you know, this game night, maybe we'll play board games or whatever, because it kind of sucks to lose a whole night to another session like that. Maybe right. Say, let's hear what's going well. Let's hear what's not going well. What do you guys think is going on? in the last three sessions, have I come close to some of those veils you have? Have I said or done anything that makes you uncomfortable? Is there times where you wish I was going another way? What do you think is going to happen? What would you like to have? Like, I wonder if you just did that second check a couple sessions in when everyone kind of knows their character, the dynamics between the characters is established a little more. If you have someone who's new, they're probably a little more comfortable. Like, I wonder if there's a benefit to that. If you've done that, anyone listening, hop on Discord, let us know, because I'm very curious. I like, Eric, I like what you're saying about doing the individual session zeros, but I wonder if, aside from what I do, because what I do is I end a session and I go, yeah, let's get some feedback going. And everyone's like, right. No, it was great. I'm going to go finish
and
this beer.
And it's usually like, because you usually play an hour longer than you intended. So everybody's super tired and nobody wants to talk.
Exactly. You know? They're just stroking your ego because no one wants to be the jerk.
That's definitely true. But you know what? Talking about the session 3.5, to be 100% honest with you, I've done it. It works really, really well. And I've done it with Resting Glitch. We do a season model. So we did a first season. After season one was completed, we got together, and this was, you know, sometime after season one was completed, got together and had like a pre-season two session zero, and was like, okay, here's my list of NPCs. What are your thoughts of them? Here's the plot points that you have uncovered. And then, you know, is there anywhere else, anything else you would like to do? Is there any directions you would like to go with your personal character? And what would you like to see from the plot perspective, what would you like to uncover in this next season? You could apply that towards your game. And, you know, just because we do it as an actual play and on a recording, doesn't mean that that's the only way that could be used. You could certainly do that for your game. And there's always, if you're talking about D&D is the super easiest way of doing that, because every time you do a milestone level, do a session zero, you know, so that way your character, your players know, you know, all right, we're going to do a debrief. We're going to kind of talk about what's going on and what directions we want to do. And it's a natural feel to it. So that way, if you have this discussion before they level, then they can make adjustments to how they level.
And then everyone has more information. Maybe don't do it before a session, because it would really suck if everyone's feedback was everything you had prepped. That feels like that would be a little demoralizing.
Right.
But yeah, an individual, or even like we were talking about session zero, A, B, and C, one-on-one conversations in between, you know, giving people an idea of this is a great time if something's going on. I always say, what is it that you haven't seen that you want to see? And what is it that you've seen that you don't want to see no more? Like that's generally my two ways of going about it when I'm pulling feedback. Close to end of time here, Eric, because this show is, it's a 30-minute show, and it's crazy because in gaming-related podcasts, I like to think of myself as a unicorn, and also mm-hmm. I just like to think of myself as a unicorn. Let's all be honest.
Right.
I do have two quick questions for you real quick. Number one, why isn't Resting Glitch Face in East Texas University actual play podcast? Because you guys did that April Fool's Day episode, and it was life. It was so good. It was like perfection. It's like it was made for them.
Well, it was a lot of fun. You know, what's funny is that was all Shannon's idea, because she, I mean, I like ETU. I really do. She loves ETU.
She's like my level when it comes to ETU love.
Right, exactly. So it was, she said, let's do an April Fool's of, you know, as if we were switching from Shadowrun to ETU, and we won't explain any of it, and we'll just kind of go as if we're starting a whole new podcast, but it's with these same characters. And what was weird about that was it transitioned.
How little changed?
Yeah, it was so little changed, because essentially they play Shadowrun, these Shadowrun characters, as if they are ETU characters. And, you know, it's very much into the social, you know, the social struggles and the things that young people deal with. So, yeah. And what it showed me was a lot of times you hear things like, you know, when a story's strong or a plot is strong, when you can apply any genre to it. Mm-hmm. And it still holds up. I looked at it as, you can tell that this character group is strong, and the character concepts are strong because we switched completely different games and genres and it held up.
100%.
So that told me that we could probably do Resting Glitch in any setting and it would probably still work. But ETU is that's a little possibly a little ambitious because ETU is it fits that dynamic so well.
Yeah, it's almost like cheating. Kind of loaded right. The deck.
But it was a good thing to do to start it off with because it gave us the confidence to say, yep, this could work. We could do this.
And that was going to be my second question was if people are interested in checking out Resting Glitch Phase, Gamers Table, any of the live streams that you guys are doing. I know Star Trek's back, right? Sequoia.
Yes.
How would people figure out more about that and be able to see more of the stuff you're up to?
Well, we do have our own Discord, so a Discord channel. And then gamerstable.com is kind of a one-stop shop where you can get access to all of our feeds, whether it be the actual play stuff or the talk show. Resting Glitch is actually part of that. Resting Glitch Face has its own website, restingglitchface.com. But really what it does is just links you to the main hub. So anywhere the podcasts can be found, you could also find Resting Glitch Face. We're on iTunes and, just all of, Spotify and all that stuff. So if you just look for Resting Glitch Face, I'm pretty 100% certain that's it's the only one you'll ever find. We have a YouTube channel and a Twitch channel, Gamers Table does. So you can just watch when you're talking about Sequoia. It's funny because, and I know we're almost out of time, but the way Resting Glitch Face is exactly the same way that I'm doing this Star Trek Adventures live stream, in that it's very slice of life. And I've found that on a Federation starship is a perfect setting for something like that.
Well, wonderful. I will say, if anyone at home wants to check out the Gamers Table Discord, it is pretty good. There's not enough Savage Worlds talk there for my taste, but for the most part,
it is not. It isn't a Savage Worlds board. I mean, it practically is. I mean, with I'm you there. And some of the other. Yeah.
I'm just slowly bringing everyone in. It's okay. Soon you will get your microchip, and you will be fully bennied out. All right, Eric, well, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us today and go over this. A lot of great stuff. And everyone listening at home, thank you guys so much, and we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Gaming with Gage. If you have ideas for upcoming guests, want to chat with the cast, or a chance to play in some of our games, you can find our Discord link in the show notes. You can also find the show at facebook.com/gamingwithgage and on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at GamingWGage. Your support makes this show a reality week after week. One of the best ways to help out is to leave 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We read all of them, and sometimes we even read them on the air. We look forward to hearing from each and every one of you, but until then, we'll see you next week.